Right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Today is Monday, September 8th, 2025. And the top story this morning, yet another all-time high in gold. And silver is also rallying on worries of a shortage. And I am sure I'm going to get comments from people who just read the headline, don't watch the video, don't read anything into it. People are going to jump down my throat about that silver shortage thing in the title this morning. That was on purpose. No, I don't think the world is running out of silver. I think there's plenty of silver. I think there's actually going to be more silver next year than there was this year. But the silver's in the wrong place. That's driving prices higher. So let's take these one at a time. First of all, what's going on with gold? Gold had a really nice technical breakout last week, and it is set to rip here. It's continuing this morning. We've got the Fed cuts are propelling gold higher. We've got asset prices across the board hovering near all-time highs, and yet we're talking about entering an easing cycle. That is rocket fuel for gold. We've got tariff worries creating economic uncertainty. People don't know what's going to happen to corporate profits or consumer inflation. When you're worried, when you're uneasy about things, you go to a safe place. Gold is the ultimate economic safe space. You've also got job worries. That jobs report on Friday was absolutely dreadful. And people are worried about another dreadful job report coming out tomorrow at 10 a.m. Put a pin in that. So you got job worries. Where do you go? Your safe place. You go to gold. We've got recession worries. We've got central banks are still buying gold. The setup for gold is just absolutely beautiful here. Now, here's the problem, guys. This is great news for gold bugs, right? People who own gold, I own gold, I own some gold miners, right? I'm loving this. Problem is most people don't own any gold. Gold making a new high day in and day out is not good for most people. This is not an encouraging sign. So shout out to all my gold bugs and all my metal stackers there. I'm sure you guys are just loving life. But let's be honest here, guys. I don't think any of us really want to live in a world of $5,000 gold, but that's probably coming in the not too distant future here. Now, let's talk about what's going on with silver, because silver is, for the most part, along for the ride, along with gold. Right? Silver is a 50% monetary metal, 50% industrial metal. Now, you would expect the industrial worries to be holding silver back a little bit here, especially in the context of the tariff situation and slowdowns in global trade. That could be a detriment to silver. But we're not actually seeing that. Silver's doing pretty good this morning. So look. There's plenty of silver in the world. I said shortage in the title. The world is not running out of silver. There are people out there, most of them are people who sell silver, are out there saying the world is going to run out and the price is going to go to $10,000 an ounce. That's not going to happen, not without hyperinflation. But there is plenty of other things that are driving silver higher. Last week, silver was very quietly added to the critical minerals list. Now, being added to the critical minerals list, it's not some magic wand that all of a sudden makes millions of ounces of silver demand appear, but it does put it on a short list of metals that are seeing some kind of protectionist behavior by the federal government. And the fact that we've got silver now on the critical minerals list has some people worried, hey, maybe the tariffs on bullion are going to make a comeback here. And by the way, what is this, like the third or the fourth time this year people have been worried about tariffs on silver bullion only to be disappointed and we see the price crash, but then it corrects back higher? Well, we're talking about this again because of this silver critical minerals thing. By the way, excuse me, guys, the allergies are absolutely killing me this morning, but I digress. So, look, I don't think we're going to run out of silver because of this. We could have the tariffs come back. And because the tariffs maybe are coming back, we've got people are starting to pull their metal out of London and bring it into New York. So we're starting to see that New York, the COMEX price, is rallying a little bit faster than that London spot price is, creating this arbitrage opportunity where if you pull your metal out of London and bring it to New York, you can sell it for the difference, a couple of pennies per ounce. That's up to about 70 cents this morning. Pretty decent arbitrage opportunity. Now, while that's all going on, you've also got a lot of buying by FOMO investors, buying ETFs. So the silver ETFs are buying up more metal. That's mostly stored in London. You have London traders are starting to worry a little bit about a shortage here. Again, it's not that we're running out of silver. It's just that we've got all the silver in the wrong place. And we do have a lot of new silver supplies coming to market. I mentioned this late last week. I do think a lot of silver stackers are selling their metals right now. You can see it in the stacking channels. You can see it when you go into the coin shops. They have plenty of inventory. Premiums are very low. People who have been stacking the shiny, you know, like they've been buying their 1 ounces and their 10 ounces, right? This stuff is all going up in value, and a lot of people are selling that. That stuff is being melted down into good delivery bars and sold on the COMEX. So there is new supply coming to market in the form of old supply that's being remelted down. So I don't think we're going to run out here, but that doesn't mean prices can't go higher. We're watching it happen in real time. And again, shout out to all my stackers. You guys have been patient over the years. You've watched Mr. Slammy day in and day out. Well, now it's time for new all-time highs day in and day out. And I think silver is probably got a one-way ticket to somewhere around the high 40s, low 50s at this point. That 50-year-long or 40-year-long cup-and-handle pattern going all the way back to 1980, it looks like that is about to complete. Also, the most ridiculous thing I have read in a long time came up this morning. Wedbush's Dan Ives is starting a new treasury company, a new crypto treasury company. But this one is going to be buying WorldCoin. Yeah, that's Sam Altman's little universal basic income token where you stick your face into the orb and scan your eyeball and they give you a little bit of WorldCoin, his stupid little shit token that he wants to use to take over the world. I did a video about this like 2 years ago. Guys, we are almost there. All right, crypto winter is almost here. In my opinion, we are down to days, possibly weeks. Maybe by the end of this month, certainly by the end of October, something really bad is going to happen in crypto. These treasury companies, I think, is the failure mode this time around. Something really bad is going to happen in crypto. Please be careful if you are out on leverage, guys. You're running out of time here. I own Bitcoin. I own a lot of Bitcoin. I am looking to reduce my Bitcoin holdings over the next few weeks. Just be careful. That's all I can tell you. Things are getting ridiculous in crypto. We've also got the expected annual benchmark revisions to the jobs numbers are coming out tomorrow. This will be around 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're going to get this big release from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And guys, the last time we did this, they were revised lower. I think it was like 600,000 jobs lower last year. This is changes to prior months' reports. This will be for the data from March of 2024 to March of this year. And they're expecting anywhere from 600,000 to 1 million previously announced job gains to disappear. That's going to make things even worse for the people who are complaining about the labor statistics. Look, guys, I've been saying for years the job market is not as good as the government has been claiming it is. I've been talking about the bifurcated economy. They're just finally willing to admit it after gaslighting us for years about the greatest economy ever. I guess now that we don't have a, you know, octogenarian imbecile who drinks prune juice and soils his britches on live TV, now that he's not the president anymore, now we have an egomaniacal Republican in charge, now we're willing to admit how bad things really are. They've been that way for a while, since 2022, I think. And speaking of the bifurcated economy, McDonald's CEO was out last week. I didn't catch this one until this weekend. This interview got a lot of airtime. McDonald's CEO talking about a two-tier economy, something we've talked about on this channel for a lot. The top 10% of incomes are doing really, really well here because they own assets. Everybody else is struggling. McDonald's can see it now too. We got another recessionary story. Spirit Airlines is cutting 54% of their flights to Las Vegas. So you've got an airline filing bankruptcy for the second time in 1 year, combined with the collapse of tourism in Las Vegas. That story is the confluence of two very big stories right there. An interesting one from SpaceX this morning. SpaceX is buying $17 billion worth of broadband spectrum from EchoStar. This is the second big unloading of spectrum from EchoStar that we've seen in about a month. I'm not sure what's really going on with EchoStar, but it seems like they are selling off company assets, becoming a much smaller, leaner operation. And you got a stock there with a lot of short interest. So we could be looking at a short squeeze in EchoStar shares here. We got a big immigration raid in Georgia. Pay attention to that one. That could potentially complicate things with the trade deal with the South Koreans, of all people. China's exports to the United States fell by 33% year over year in August as the trade war has taken a big chunk out of China's overcapacity in industrial production. We got some new names in the S&P 500 this morning. They are rallying as ETFs buy up those shares. And pay attention to this article in Bloomberg this morning about BlackRock. They are telling us where all this private equity is going, where all that garbage they need to unload is going. There is one particular type of investor they are targeting in our 401ks. Pay attention, guys. Know what you own. Do not trust people here. They are looking for bag holders, and the bag holders are going to be the ones who don't pay attention. We got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in markets today. As always, guys, hit that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day as my allergies are killing me once again. Right now, guys, the S&P 500 is looking pretty good this morning, up 16 points, about a quarter of 1%. Pretty much everything is up this morning, guys. We've got the Dow is higher as well by 86 points or 0.19% for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is up by 95 points or 0.4%. So we got all three indexes are priced higher this morning. And we've got a weaker dollar once again, 97.51 for the Dixie. That's off by about 26 basis points, a little more than a quarter of a percent lower for the dollar. Weaker dollar, that's putting upward pressure on the price of pretty much everything. Meanwhile, in the bond market, we've got yields are lower. That means bond prices are going higher here. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.737. That's down by about 4 basis points. Well, not quite 4 basis points. The 10-year is at 4.056. That's off by 2.5 points. The 2-year is at 3.495, off by a point and change. And the 1-month is down by 2 basis points, 4.188, as the market begins to price in the certainty of at least one cut from the Federal Reserve on the 17th. Looking over at the commodities board, there's gold and silver doing really well. We'll talk a little bit more about these in a second here. Look at your spot price here. Actually, we've got the London prices ripping this morning, $3,629 for spot gold. That's your price in London, up by about 1.2%. Now, your New York price, $3,669, that's up by about 15, 16 bucks or 0.4%. Not quite as much as the London price is moving. Now, with silver, though, we've got the opposite. We've got the London prices moving a little bit less than the New York price. That's that critical minerals tariff worry playing out there in silver. We've got $41.37 for the spot price. That's your London price, higher by about 36 cents or 0.88% higher. But your New York price on the COMEX, that's in the futures market. We're sitting here. Are we going to hit 42 while I'm talking about silver? Come on, give me 42 bucks. $41.992, up by 44 cents or about 1.06% higher. So we are seeing those December futures are trading a lot higher than they are. What are we looking at? About 65, 64 cents higher than they are in London right now. I like the shiny. Copper is up by a little bit this morning, just a couple of cents. Platinum is higher by 0.8%. Palladium is higher by almost 2%. And crude oil is even higher this morning, 1.6% higher, 62.88 for October WTI futures. Silver just couldn't give me that 42 handle while I was talking. All right, so let's talk about what's going on in metals here. We've got gold hits record high above 3,600 an ounce as traders weigh Fed cut bets. And look, it's the Fed rate cuts. That's probably the biggest driver here. Going into an easing cycle with asset prices at all-time highs, that's going to be your main driver of gold here. Gold's stellar rally extended beyond the 3,600 level for the first time on Monday after soft U.S. jobs data cemented expectations of an interest rate cut by the U.S. Federal Reserve next week. Spot gold was up 0.9% at 36.17 an ounce. Bullion rose to a record high of 36.22 earlier in the session. Bullion has surged about 38% so far this year, building on a 27% gain in 2024. Driven by a weaker dollar, strong central bank buying, a soft monetary policy backdrop, and geopolitical and economic uncertainty. And that sentence pretty much has gold in a box there. Those are the big factors driving metals higher. U.S. job growth weakened sharply in August. Data showed on Friday, and the unemployment rate increased to a nearly four-year high of 4.3%, confirming that labor market conditions were softening and sealing the case for a Fed rate cut next week. Rate cut bets are boosting the demand of gold. Moreover, the overall geopolitical scenario is extremely uncertain. We should consider that a significant part of the demand is also coming from central bank buying, said Carlo Alberto de Casa, an external analyst at banking group Swissquote. So that's what's driving your gold price this morning. But check out silver here. Silver borrowing costs surge on tariff-driven supply jitters. So, you know, borrowing costs surging, supply jitters, that sounds a lot like a shortage, doesn't it? Again, it's not necessarily a shortage. It's just that the metal's in the wrong place. Surging lease rates for silver are once again upending the precious metals market, with traders fearing that possible U.S. tariffs could squeeze already tight supplies in London as price dislocations reemerge between key trading hubs. Washington last month categorized silver as a critical U.S. national security, a critical mineral to U.S. national security, fueling worries that its new status may draw the attention of President Trump, who ordered an investigation into critical minerals in April. That sent futures in New York above international benchmark as traders price in the risk of silver getting hit with tariffs, and holders scramble to ship the white metal into the U.S. in order to capture that premium. The U.S. market's concern is that the metal might be subject to tariffs, said Bernard Dada, an analyst at Natixis. He said in an emailed note, the demand for physical silver is in turn reducing the pool of available leasable material in London and as such lifting silver's lease rate. Physical supplies of silver were already looking tight, with European refiners focused on recasting gold bars in recent weeks due to the confusion over Trump's tariffs. Meanwhile, inventories in London have dwindled as investors pile into exchange-traded funds backed by gold and silver, which have clocked year-to-date gains of more than 35 and 40% respectively. That scarcity is already filtering through to the market. Silver futures on COMEX are trading at an elevated premium of about 70 cents, and London's benchmark spot price and the cost of borrowing silver in the UK capital on a short-term basis has spiked above 5% for the fifth time this year, well above historical levels of near zero. Prices in 1 year have gone lower than today's price, talking about backwardation here, a rare event reflecting stronger demand for the metal that's immediately available. That could be because dealers are looking to move metal to the U.S. before possible levies are imposed. All right, look, guys, we've seen those levy threats several times this year, and they have not materialized each time. And so we're back to this worry. But look, I showed this pattern on my channel a couple of times over the last few weeks. Gold has recently broken out from this ascending triangle pattern, and it just looks set to rip here. We've been seeing this for the last couple of days. That is probably going to continue here. Gold seems to have a clear path to $4,000 here, guys. And also, I would point out the gold to silver ratio suggests that silver might outperform. The gold to silver ratio hit an obscenely high level of 105 earlier in the year. Silver has outperformed ever since then. We had a couple of very important events. We rejected the 200-day moving average back at the beginning of August. Then we had a death cross in the gold to silver ratio. All right, this is the ratio of the two metals. Silver has been outperforming gold and looks to be set to continue outperforming gold, because after this death cross in the ratio, we've had several rejections right here and then even this morning of the 50-day moving average for the gold to silver ratio. Look, gold is going to rip here, and I think silver is going to rip even harder, at least until we get another note from somebody telling us that tariffs are not going to happen in silver, which would be the third time this year that happened. Let's check in with Bitcoin real quick. Having a good morning here, $112,258. Bitcoin may stage one more price rally before the end of this cycle, guys, but we are getting very near the end of this cycle. And the reason why, you can always tell, because the fraud and the stupidity reaches a fever pitch right before the end of the cycle, much like happened last time, right before FTX blew up. It was the dot-com bull or the crypto bull, all the stupid crypto Super Bowl commercials we had in 2021. That could have telegraphed what was coming. This morning, we got this one, and I really think it's these treasury companies that are going to be the failure mechanism this time around that brings the crypto market down. Dan Ives to become chair of a company that will buy Sam Altman-backed WorldCoin for its treasury. And WorldCoin, I did a video about this a couple of years ago, guys. WorldCoin is just so unbelievably stupid. And the fact that there is a company now, and the whole reason this company is going to exist is to borrow money to buy WorldCoin, that tells me we are almost at the top here. Wedbush Securities' Dan Ives is joining a new company focused on accumulating WorldCoin, the native token of blockchain used in OpenAI creator Sam Altman's biometric identity verification startup World, where you scan your eyeball in this Death Star-looking orb and they give you a little deposit of WorldCoin in exchange for that. Then they go sell your biometric data. 8Co Holdings, a tiny company that currently trades on the NASDAQ under the ticker Octo, announced on Monday that Ives Wedbush, global head of technology research, is now chairman of the board of directors. It also announced a $250 million private placement to implement a buying strategy around WorldCoin as its main treasury asset. As someone that's so passionate about the AI revolution and the future of tech, I view World as a really de facto standard for authentication and identification in the world of AI, Ives told CNBC. I would not be doing this initiative if I thought it was just a cookie cutter token strategy. That is exactly what it is, by the way, a cookie cutter token strategy. The offering is expected to close on or around September 11th, at which point it plans to change its ticker to Orbs after the silly Death Star looking thing that you use to scan your eyeball. Again, guys, this is telling us that the top is almost in. When you see shit coins like this getting treasury holding companies, this is not a good sign for the crypto market. Also, get ready for some big downward revisions once again. I mean, the ink isn't even dry on Friday's downward revisions. And now we got another big one coming, the annual one. Another U.S. jobs markdown sets the stage for a Fed cut and BLS criticism. U.S. job growth in the year through March was probably far less robust than government figures currently show, say it ain't so, underscoring a labor market that shifted into a lower gear well before the hiring slowdown this summer. Something we have been saying for years. We said it all last year and all 2023. The job market was not nearly as strong as they were claiming. Economists at Wells Fargo, Comerica Bank, and Pantheon Macroeconomics expect the BLS preliminary benchmark revision on Tuesday to show the March payrolls count was almost 800,000 less than currently estimated, or about 67,000 a month down on average. Nomura Securities, Bank of America, and Royal Bank of Canada say the downgrade could even be closer to a million. While the dated snapshot of job growth, a substantial downward revision would illustrate a labor market with far less steam last year and reinforce expectations of a series of Federal Reserve interest rate cuts, a second year of sizable revisions to the employment count also risks drawing the ire of President Trump, who has criticized the accuracy of BLS data. Once a year, the BLS benchmarks the March payrolls level to a more accurate but less timely data source called the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages, which is based on state unemployment insurance tax records and covers nearly all U.S. jobs. That's in addition to the revisions it conducts in each month's jobs report, all of which ultimately make the data more accurate. A big downward revision to job growth through March would have less implications for monetary policy than a downward revision to job growth in the most recent months, but it does set the stage for the broader context of how the economy has been doing, said Bill Adams, chief economist at Comerica. And all things equal, downward revisions to job growth increase pressure on the Fed to ease policy. Just another data point that points towards a recession. And look, we've got a couple of stories here that also point towards a recession. We got this one. McDonald's CEO warns of a two-tier economy as lower-income consumers spend less. McDonald's is expanding its value meal menu. The reason suggests growing trouble in the economy, analysts say. In an interview last Tuesday on CNBC, McDonald's CEO Chris Kempinski said the move was in response to growing evidence of a divided consumer landscape. While upper-income households continue to spend freely, the rest are struggling. That is exactly what I have been saying since 2022. But remember, guys, it was the best economy ever for years, right up until it isn't. And then when they admit that it isn't, they're like, actually, it hasn't been that strong all along. Again, I was ahead of these guys by freaking years. But you know what? I'm just a doomer. What do I know? Particularly with middle and lower-income consumers, they're feeling under a lot of pressure right now, Kempinski said. He added that it's really kind of a two-tier economy, saying all last year I was talking about the bifurcation of the U.S. economy. The idea that the economy is bifurcating is not new, but the trend seems to be becoming more pronounced. It began bubbling up more recently as the COVID pandemic showed signs of waning and stocks started to surge. Pandemic assistance from the government helped level the playing field for a time, but by 2024, mounting inflation pressures and elevated interest rates had begun to resort consumers according to their ability to withstand financial stress. By the start of 2025, the richest 10% of Americans, or those earning at least $250,000 a year, accounted for half of all consumer spending. That's a record, according to Moody's. By comparison, the richest 10% accounted for just 36% of all consumer spending 30 years ago. That's a trend that's poised to continue. Job growth is showing signs of stalling, while cost pressures on companies and consumers are rising due to tariffs. Low-income consumers now have substantially higher levels of credit card debt than they did in 2019. They also have BNPL debt and student loan debt, but I digress. Lower-income workers have increased hardship withdrawals from their 401k retirement plans. Vanguard Financial Services told NBC News, as hiring growth for hourly workers has slumped. Yet stocks continue to mostly churn higher. The result, well-off consumers are spending their way through broader economic uncertainty, while prospects for everyone else increasingly stagnate. It is a bifurcated two-tier economy. 10% are doing really well and everybody else is struggling. But you don't need me to tell you that. I've been telling you that for years and you guys know that. Your lived experience tells you that. And this article from Spirit also tells us that. Spirit Airlines cuts 54% of Las Vegas flights this winter. Now, this is a crazy story because this is the second time Spirit Airlines has declared bankruptcy, and you've got the decline in tourism to Las Vegas rolled right into one convenient little story here. Spirit Airlines has announced a significant reduction to its Las Vegas operations, cutting 54% of its flight this winter. Starting October 2nd, 2025, the airline will discontinue service to 8 cities from Harry Reid International Airport, including Albuquerque, Boise, Portland, Salt Lake City, Sacramento, Oakland, San Diego, and San Jose. The move follows Spirit's second Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing within a year as the airline seeks to restructure and stabilize its finances. Guys, something bad is going to happen in Las Vegas. I can tell you the pricing in that city has gotten so out of control, and you can't sell $200 lunch buffet meals, and then on the other side of one pane of glass, you have people defecating on the sidewalk. Those two things occupying the same space is a freaking powder keg. Something is going to happen in Las Vegas, and it ain't going to be good. Spirit Airlines cutting their flights there. They can see it coming as well. Meanwhile, Musk's SpaceX agrees to buy EchoStar Spectrum for $17 billion. We're getting a little slow on time here, guys, or a little low on time, and we've had a couple stories here. Look, EchoStar is selling off this big chunk of bandwidth to SpaceX. And I think this story is getting a lot of attention because of Elon Musk and SpaceX, but this is the second time EchoStar has done this. They sold, I think it was $23 billion worth of spectrum to AT&T last month. And this follows a year ago when EchoStar sold off their holdings in Dish Network and Sling TV. They got out of the satellite TV business a year ago. They sold all those assets off to DirecTV. And since they no longer do satellite TV, they don't need all that bandwidth, and they're selling that for tens of billions of dollars, and they're using it to pay down their substantial debt. This company, EchoStar, is deep, deep in debt. So they're selling off these assets to get out of debt. They're going to come out of it a much leaner company. And EchoStar stock is ripping this morning on this news. This is the second time this year this has happened. The opening bell has now rung. The stock is up 21.4%. Guys, the short interest in this company was like 14% of float, according to Yahoo Finance this morning. So, you know, you've got the potential for a short squeeze here on this company that is just ripping. And, you know, look at the one-year chart of this. You can see here's a big step up this morning right here. There was also a big step up back in August when they made that deal with AT&T. You know, this stock was trading at $25 to $30 for most of the last year. Now here we are trading at $82, and you got high short interest. This thing could go a hell of a lot higher here. I don't know what this company is going to look like coming out of this. They're pretty much selling off all their pieces of themselves. They still do like networking and other services, but for the most part here, they're just trying to get out of debt, and who knows what this company is going to look like on the other side of that. All right. Meanwhile, this one, pay attention to this story because this could potentially complicate the trade war. South Korea to fly detained workers back as U.S. vows more raids on employers. It was a big immigration raid on Friday on this battery plant in Georgia, and they found a lot of illegal South Koreans working there. South Korea is moving to pick up Korean workers following a raid in the U.S. state of Georgia last week, a Korean presidential official said on Sunday, as the Trump administration promised more raids on businesses. The negotiations to release about 300 South Koreans who were detained have concluded, and processing for their release from custody is ongoing, South Korea's presidential office said late on Sunday. A chartered plane will be flown to bring them back as soon as the processing by the two countries is complete, the official said in a statement. It did not provide details of what administration steps are being taken. Look, we had this big raid here. It was late last week. This is a big Hyundai battery plant that was being built in Georgia. And by the way, this battery plant is being built with about $2.3 billion worth of state tax benefits and other subsidies that are going to pay for this. This was supposed to be one of those like put America to work by building factories with investments from other countries. And what ended up happening is they weren't putting Americans back to work. South Koreans were flying their people over here to illegally work on these plants. They were coming here on travel visas that doesn't let them work, and yet they were here working. This is American taxpayers subsidizing work for South Koreans. And so I'm glad they did this raid. But keep in mind, we just had this big trade deal was cut with the South Koreans recently where they're claiming they're going to invest hundreds of billion dollars, including in shipbuilding and things like that here in the States. Well, I think they plan to do the same thing with all of those investments. And well, maybe now that they can't fly their people over here to work those jobs, maybe those investments don't happen. We'll just have to wait and see. But late on Sunday, President Trump sounded more conciliatory while still driving home a vow to enforce tough immigration policy, calling on foreign companies investing in the U.S. to respect our nation's immigration laws. Your investments are welcome, and we encourage you to legally bring your very smart people with great technical talent to build world-class products, and we will make it quickly and legally possible for you to do so, the president said in one massive run-on sentence. Trump made the post shortly after telling reporters he would look at what happened, but that the incident had not harmed the relationship with South Korea. U.S. federal agents arrested 475 workers at Hyundai's car battery plant in Ellaville, Georgia, on Thursday in the largest single-site enforcement operation in history. That's according to the Department of Homeland Security. Now, the important thing here, guys, too, to keep in mind is all of these South Koreans are being flied home. Supposedly, they're not being actually deported. They're just being sent home. And you might be saying, what's the difference? Well, if they're deported, they can't come right back. But if they're sent home, they can then apply for a visa. We can give them the visa, and then they can come right back and do the job anyway. So I wonder if there's some kind of backroom deals are being made here with the Trump administration and the South Koreans that really is just going to turn this into one silly exercise of flying people around the world and then bringing them back to do the exact same thing that they were arrested for doing. We'll see what actually comes out of this. Also in the trade war front this morning, China's shipments to the U.S. plunged by 33% in August as overall export growth hits a six-month low. Now, this is kind of important here, guys. You can see the trade war taking a chunk out of the Chinese exports here, a 33% decline in exports to the United States, but their exports did still grow. It was a very low amount of growth, but their exports still did grow. And that would suggest that there's still a little bit of that transshipment is going on where the Chinese are sending their manufactured goods to a place like Vietnam or a place like Japan or South Korea, and then they're being repackaged and then sent to the U.S. in order to get around those Chinese tariffs. The fact that the exports to the U.S. were down 33%, but overall they still had export growth, means that stuff is being shipped somewhere. And I'm sorry, guys, there's just nowhere in the world where you can just ship extra products and expect them to absorb the loss of market share of the world's largest economy. Vietnam and Malaysia just can't buy more stuff to offset U.S. store shelves. They're just not big enough. So it looks like there's still some transshipments are going on here. I don't know how bad it is. And I don't know if the Trump administration is going to crack down on that or not. That was a big factor in the trade deal we cut with Vietnam, that the Vietnamese were going to crack down on Chinese companies transshipping through their market in order to reach the U.S. without paying tariffs. And we got a couple of new companies are joining the S&P 500 this morning. We won't spend too much time on this one, but Robinhood, AppLovin, and Emcor are joining the S&P 500 in a rebalancing, and we got a couple of companies are coming out. AppLovin, Robinhood, and Emcor will be added to the index. The three companies will replace Market Access Holdings, Caesars Entertainment, Inc., and Enphase Energy prior to the start of trading on September 22nd. So there's some interesting things here. Robinhood, AppLovin, I think those are kind of bubble stocks, to be honest with you. But right now, they're getting added to the index, and so those stocks are going to rip because ETFs that track the S&P 500 now have to go buy those stocks. Meanwhile, you've got, I don't know a lot about this market access company, but Caesars Entertainment, they're out of the S&P 500. Remember that story about Spirit Airlines in Las Vegas? Well, Caesars getting kicked out of the S&P 500. That's another sign of the times. People aren't gambling as much, not spending as much money at Caesars Resorts. And Enphase Energy, that's a big solar company. They're being kicked out of the S&P 500, cracked down by the Trump administration on solar subsidies, some of these offshore wind development projects that have had their funding cut recently. So you can see that is changing in the S&P 500 as well. You can see it in the stock performance this morning. We've got Robinhood shares are ripping up 11.3% on being added to the index. That's off of ETF buying. And let's see, AppLovin, ticker APP, they are also up almost 11% on this news. Stock trading at $543 as the ETFs pile in. All right, guys, last one we got to talk about this morning, and I've been trying to devote at least a little bit of time in every stream to this topic because I think this is a huge deal. I think the average investor is being robbed as we speak, and I'm trying to get the word out about this. BlackRock says 24% of retirement plans weigh alternative assets. And alternative assets, that's just the buzzword that the financial press is using to describe you being used as exit liquidity for the strip mining robber barons of private equity who now are sitting on companies that they have bought up with other people's money, and those companies are going belly up and they're looking to dump those assets into your retirement plan in order to cash out before the bubble goes burst. And right now they're telling us who it's going to be. BlackRock is telling us here. BlackRock said 24% of retirement plans are considering adding alternative assets over the next year, highlighting the potential for some trillions of dollars sitting in those accounts to flow into private equity, private credit, and other investments. And here it is. Default target date funds were the most likely type of product that the plan said would potentially be used to include alternatives alongside stocks and bonds. That's what BlackRock said in a survey released on Monday. Default target date funds. And I'll tell you what, it's not a mystery why they're picking default target date funds as where they're going to park most of this crap. Because people who sit in default target rate date funds tend to be people who don't pay attention to what's in their 401k. All right, most companies, if you just check the box, yes, I want to contribute to my 401k. If you don't specifically tell them what funds you want to invest in, they look at your age and they put you in a default target date fund. And that is where these private alternative assets are going to be dumped right now. And it's not a mystery why. These are the people who don't pay attention. These are the people who just blindly trust that their company and the asset managers have their best interests at heart. They don't. And so it's default target date funds. Guys, if you're in one of these target date funds, understand you are the dumping ground for private assets, for private credit, for private equity, for all this crap that everybody knows is not worth what they say it's worth. So pay attention, open up your fund prospectus, know what you're owning. Of the plans considering alternative assets, 30% said they would add a standalone private fund to a menu of investment options for savers. And right there, they're saying only about a third of these investment advisors are actually going to create an alternative asset fund, a fund where you know you're investing in these things when you choose that option. The rest of this stuff is just going to be snuck in with the other things so that you don't notice your portfolio is being loaded up with this. Let's just call it what it is, guys. This is dog shit wrapped in cat shit. And they're looking to put it in default target date funds. Protect yourselves, guys. The bailout is happening now. You are the exit liquidity. Don't let them do it to you. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Thomas Owen. Thank you, Thomas, for supporting the channel. He says GDX priced $64 oil, $100, and gold $1,100 in its 2011 peak. All right, so we're drawing parallels to 2011, which was the previous high in silver. Gold has gone up by 330% and oil is down by 30%. How high can the miners really go? All right, so when you've got cheaper oil and more expensive gold, that is rocket fuel for your miners, right? Because oil along with labor, that's energy and labor, that's the biggest expense for the miners. And so if the expenses are going down and the benefits, the gold price is going higher. miners can go higher here, all right? And GDX, by the way, that's the ETF that invests in gold miners, probably doing pretty well, probably going to keep doing pretty well here. Guys, price targets, how high? Honestly, I couldn't tell you. GDX is made up of so many different companies. To really put a quantity on there, it would take you a long time, a lot of math, and even then it'd probably still be wrong in the long run. I can tell you gold looks like it's going to continue going higher here, at least in the short term, probably in the medium term. We're getting set up for another easing cycle. The prior easing cycle never even really ended. I mean, they've been telling us they've been tightening this whole time, but the money supply has been expanding all along. So absent a major deflationary bust, gold is going to keep grinding higher here. And I think $4,000 by the end of this year is probably reasonable, especially based on that breakout from the chart that we showed you earlier. This, you know, gold's having a good run here. So once again, guys, congratulations to the stackers. Enjoy it. But keep in mind, gold making new highs day in and day out, that's not good news. That is good news for your gold holdings. But for everyone else, for everywhere else in the economy, gold ripping like this is a big warning sign. Thank you, Thomas, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate the super chat. Pee-pee, poo-poo. Thank you, sir, for the super chat, supporting the channel. He says, housing near Dayton, where I live, is starting to see houses sit for months. We're seeing that pretty much everywhere, by the way. Typically, a week was average. Sellers are asking $200,000 above what they paid. You know, my friends Melody and Travis, they both watch the real estate market. Travis over at Real Estate Mindset, great channel. Melody Wright, who runs a Substack, the M3 Melody Report. She also has her own YouTube channel. They've done a fantastic job documenting how these price cuts are starting, how houses are sitting for longer. Inventory has been slowly rising. We're closer to like 9 months of inventory right now, where, you know, back when everybody was crying housing shortage, we only had like 3 months of inventory. 6 months of inventory is typically considered market neutral. So, you know, there's too much inventory. Prices are starting to creep down very slowly, but they're not really dropping. The home builders are in big trouble. We're seeing lumber prices collapse here because the builders are slowing down their building. They're sitting on too much inventory. They're trying to juice their sales without lowering prices by offering things like rate buy-downs and all these other cockamamie incentives that basically effectively lowers the price of the home without messing up the comps for everything else in the neighborhood. So there is no shortage of weak indicators in the labor market right now, or weak indicators in the real estate and the housing market right now. And then when you look at what's happening in labor and how the world is finally admitting the job market sucks and that it's sucked for a while and it's probably going to get worse for the foreseeable future, it's not good for housing markets. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying here, PP. Thank you for the anecdata, for the local information. It matches what I'm seeing. And it's those Sunbelt markets, Florida to Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. That's what's being hit particularly hard right now because that's where the boom happened the most. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. My buddy, the Pasta Man, is back. He says gold, $600 in 2006, 600% today. That's your real inflation. You know, there's a pretty good analogy that's used for the price of gold. You know, back in ancient Roman times, a wealthy man's toga would cost you about 1 ounce of gold. And I don't know if this story is true or not, or if this is just an old wives' tale. But in ancient Rome, you know, if you were like a senator, you're a rich guy and you wanted to look fancy, you bought a really nice toga, it would cost you about 1 ounce of gold. Now today, what would a really nice suit cost you? Like a high-end designer suit? Probably cost you what? $3,500, $3,600, roughly about the same as the price of gold. Again, I'm not paying that much money for a suit, but I'm sure a lot of people out there's probably more expensive suits than that. But you can kind of see if you had an ounce of gold, let's say you've lived thousands of years and you've been holding gold the whole time, you had enough money for a fancy suit thousands of years ago, and you have enough money for a fancy suit today. You're not making money. It's not the price of the gold going up. It's the value of the currency going down. That's why gold is a safe haven investment. That, and you're right, Pasta Man, that's your real inflation, what you see the price of gold doing. Now, there, you know, you've got day-to-day fluctuations. You've got COMEX markets and people playing games with the futures. That can cause price swings. But over time, the price of gold is really just what your stable inflation rate is. And you know, look at a gold chart and go back to like the 1940s when gold was pegged at what, $33 an ounce was the price of gold back then. Gold has gone up 100x since we got off the gold standard. That's your inflation, guys. That's your real inflation. The government can lie about the statistics. They can hedonically adjust away higher prices and say, oh, you know, we changed the analog clock for a digital clock on your stove, and therefore it's an improvement, and that price increase doesn't count. That's how they lie to us about inflation. Gold will tell the truth. You are right on the money, Pasta Man. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. VR Sim Racer with, he's got an angry Clippy there. What's going on? He says, Clippy says, you will own gold and be happy. It looks like you're trying to position yourself for hyperinflation. Want some help? Yep, that's what Clippy says when you buy gold, and Clippy is right again. Yep, you will own gold and be happy. And I'll be honest with you guys. Look, a lot of people bought silver in the early 2020s. Silver was what, $15, $16? We went as low, or, you know, traded in the just above and below $20 for a couple of years. And everybody was saying the price is going to go higher. The price is going to go higher. We got to go higher. And bought a lot of silver. I bought a lot of silver. All right. The price is higher. And what's happening? Are those people happy? Some of them are. I'm happy. My gold and silver has gone up in value. But a lot of people are being forced to sell their silver right now. And that's why the coin shops are overloaded with inventory. And that's why the premiums are so low. People are being forced to sell their gold and silver for the same reason people are being forced to make hardship withdrawals from their 401k. Their wages have not kept up with the cost of living. And so while I am happy to see gold and silver's prices rising, keep in mind the reason those prices are rising is very bad news. And just because you own a few ounces of silver doesn't mean you're automatically protected from that. It just means you're a little hedged. Again, you know, we're probably going to see significantly higher gold in the near future here, guys, but $5,000 gold is not really a world we want to live in. We're prepared for it because we can see it coming, and it sucks. But, you know, when it gets here, I don't think we're all going to be tap dancing on our way to the bank. We'll just be slightly less miserable than our neighbors who didn't prepare by buying metals. Again, you know, there's still time. You don't have to start printing money again, guys, but they probably will. Thank you very much, VR Sim Racer and Clippy, for the laugh this morning. Appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Thank you, guys, for the super chats, for supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you, guys, for supporting the channel. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you, guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.